Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 15th, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
Hey, you pronounced it right. Cool.
Yeah, July, you mean? I've been practicing for years. I think
there's
I've got that one down.
11 to gazillion different ways to pronounce that name.
Oh, yeah. Well, my brother's name is John also, so I've had years practicing that. And so I think I've got it nailed down. I'm sure that's exactly what you meant.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Mac Weldon, which I think is pretty awesome. We'll be talking about them soon. But before we get to that, John, there is a new set of rumors kind of bouncing around that says a new Apple Watch is coming soon. And if so, that would mean probably like this fall, which probably means around September. And so that means there's two things that we have to dive into now. First, what are you expecting? And then second, how are we going to cope with what looks like to be a stunningly busy and expensive fall from Apple?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, I read this morning that rumors are getting frantic about the imminent arrival of an Apple Watch 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we've been discussing all week, MacBook Pros are imminent, hopefully with an OLED function key strip and Skylake processor, perhaps a little thinner.
And USB-C.
And USB-C.
And Thunderbolt 3.
Yes, so this is going to be exciting. And then in September, that's the typical time for Apple to announce its new iPhones. The iPhone, we think it's going to be called the iPhone 7. It's natural. We had 6 and then 6S, and now we're ready for 7.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a hardware palooza. And I was thinking the other day when on TDO we were talking about that Apple might have to do two events. They would do maybe in August, they would do a MacBook Pro and Apple Watch event, and in September do an iPhone event. I don't know. That would be a major, major big-time event. I've also seen some rumors that there might be some unexpected synergy between the iPhone 7 and the new MacBook Pros in terms of hardware capabilities and crosstalk and integration. Very vague, very vague.
Mm-hmm.
But that could explain why Apple is holding off on the MacBook Pros so that they can come out with MacBook Pros, macOS Sierra, iOS 10, and iPhone 7 all in a nice, big, tidy package. And if we throw all that in with an Apple Watch 2, oh my God, it's going to be crazy hardware.
Yeah, that would be, well, there's one other time in recent history when Apple essentially revamped its entire product line all at the same time. And this would be akin to that.
My credit card is starting to melt already.
Yeah, I am concerned about this as well, because I'm definitely in the market for the rumored MacBook Pro, and then of course the new iPhone, and actually the one that, if I didn't need to get it because this is my job, the Apple Watch, that could be the one that I would hold off. But considering this is what I do, I can see me just needing to pick up a new Apple Watch. And I'm assuming it will be noticeably different from the current model, even if the physical design doesn't change.
Yeah, how the design is going to change is a subject I've been thinking about for a long time. The question is the current design, Brian disagrees with me strongly on this, is the current design iconic? And Apple would very much like to make it iconic so that they can leave a hefty-sized battery in there while improving its capability.
Mm-hmm.
Or, as Brian suggests, thinner is cooler, and Apple would make the Apple Watch thinner. But then we've got rumors that it'll have a cell phone radio, and you'll be able to originate calls on the phone, even when you're out of range of your iPhone. and or maybe a mixture where if you're out of range, you can make a cell phone call. If you're in range, and it'll say battery power by transferring it through Bluetooth to the base iPhone.
You know, I have a different idea on that cellular part.
But let me finish.
Okay.
So if you did have a cellular radio and people were talking on their phones and it were thinner, how would you deal with the battery use?
That, yeah, you need room for that battery.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right, so here's my idea on the cellular part. Mm-hmm. It's not for calls. It's like cellular in the iPad. It's for data.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, it's that way you're not using it in the same way you would use a phone, but you'd still have that data connection when you need it.
Well, you know, people, as soon as they have a phone in their watch, they're going to sit there and use it and use it and use it and then complain about the battery.
Yeah, complain about their 20-minute battery life.
Right.
Yeah. But to me, that just seems more useful as a data connection as opposed to a voice connection.
That's a great idea. I like that idea.
All right.
And since we've got all this hardware, then for the past couple of months, I have been dwelling on this Mac Pro situation. And there are a lot of people who are hoping that Apple will come out with a remedy Mac Pro. By remedy, I mean, you know, we made a mistake. We made it too small. We didn't make it expandable enough. And here's a new black cube. Just a sister machine to the black cylinder. It looks just like the cylinder, but it's cubic and it has ports and you can add things and expand it. And then you have the cylinder, black cylinder, and the black cube. And I'll be forgiven. It'll be totally awesome. And you'll be able to put 128 or maybe even 256 gigabytes of RAM in it and have a terabyte SSD. And like 6 Thunderbolt USB-C ports. And it would be just amazing. So if Apple did that, boy, would we have a fall full of hardware. Oh, boggles the mind.
Yes. I'm kind of concerned about how expensive this fall is going to turn out to be.
Yes. And given all of those options, Apple would probably not have everything out that we've talked about, or they would break it up into two events, one in August and one in September for the phone.
Or maybe September and October.
Maybe. And then you've got two operating systems, at least two, iOS 10 and macOS Sierra, to integrate fully and to get out the door. Boy, those poor Apple engineers are not going to be able to take any vacations this summer. They're going to be really busy.
They are. And actually, John, it's four operating systems because it's macOS Sierra, iOS 10.
tvOS 6 and watchOS 3, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Too much to keep track of.
Too much to keep track of, and I fear too much for my credit card.
Well.
Yeah. Well, my priority is a new MacBook Pro. And then we'll go from there.
You could hit up the Mac Observer savings account and loan.
That's right. Yeah, sell a kidney to the company or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, is there any particular product that would be standout for you, a must-have purchase this fall?
Well, I think my watch is going to be upgraded by my wife. My 42 millimeter is too big for her to wear. And for a long time, she wasn't interested in an Apple Watch until she watched me keeping track of my steps and my calories and my calendar events. Mm-hmm. And being able to answer the phone when the phone was inconvenient to get. And so the other day she said to me, I want to be able to do what you're doing. So we'll probably buy her an Apple Watch 2, mm-hmm. 38 millimeter. And that way she'll get her watch and then I'll have it available to me for review purposes if I need to pry it out of her fingers.
All right. That sounds reasonable to me.
That would work. I'm not ready for a new Macintosh. I'm happy with my 2013 Mac Pro, mostly happy. I figured out a little bit about how to avoid these graphics card spinning cursor crashes.
A different computer?
Well, I've disabled the screensaver engine so that it never goes into screensaver mode, and my problems have largely gone away. Not perfectly, but instead of two or three a day, I'm getting one a week.
Okay, well, that's a marked improvement.
Yeah. So I went into the console log and started looking at who the bad players were. Mm-hmm. The other thing I did was I followed some advice from the Mac Rumors forum to turn off the hardware acceleration in Firefox and Chrome. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that in Safari. I don't think you can. But I'm trying to place as little pressure on that graphics card as I can so it can kind of loaf along, and I think that's helped too.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're not having to deal with as many crashes. That's a good thing.
As I mentioned the other day, the 12-inch MacBook is lovely. It's great. It's beautiful. I love it. But I could certainly stand a bigger screen. Mm-hmm. 12 seems a little cramped. I had a 13-inch MacBook Air before that, which I sold. And I think the 13-inch size is just perfect for me. So I might recycle this 12-inch MacBook and get a 13-inch
cool
Pro. But assuming it has quad core, if Apple does this thing where you can only get dual core in the 13-inch and you have to go to a 15-inch to get a quad core, if they maintain that tradition, I might just stay with the 12-inch MacBook.
All right. Well, now the ball's in Apple's court. We'll see if they can make a computer that's worthy of your credit card. Yeah.
Melted state as it is.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today.
Cool.
Yes.
Who is it?
Well, it's a sponsor that's very close to me, like literally very close to me. You'll never guess what's in my pants. That's right. Mac Weldon's underpants. And no, not a guy, a company. So Mac Weldon, they make the underpants and T-shirts and socks and hoodies and sweatpants and the stuff that's going to go against your skin that you want to feel really good and to feel really comfortable and to not wear out. That's what they do. So I've been using their 18-hour boxer briefs. And I've been really happy with those. They have the silver line that has silver threads in the fabric, and that acts like an antimicrobial layer, and it helps cut down on odors and stuff, and like really really awesome stuff. So yeah, it's like really good, and I was really surprised at how comfortable their stuff is. And I equate it to the first time that I bought a really good pair of hiking boots and realized what a difference spending the extra money to get the good stuff makes. And now I totally get it for this too. Man, the Mac Weldon line is just killer. And so I've been trying T-shirts, underwear, and socks. And if I was into hoodies, I would have picked up one of those too. Maybe I'll have to do it anyhow. So what you guys need to do is go check out their website and pick out some stuff to try because it's really good. And they guarantee it. So if you don't like it, don't worry. They're going to take care of you. But you'll like it. I have no doubt. So hit their website up, macweldon.com. That's macweldon.com. And then use the discount code TDO. You'll get 20% off your order, which is a killer deal. And you'll have some really great stuff to wear. And then it'll be like our own little club. And someone will say, so what are you wearing? And we'll all know. We're all wearing Mac Weldon. So check it out, macweldon.com. Use a discount code TDO, and you're going to get 20% off. Totally awesome. So thank you, Mac Weldon, for being our sponsor. Okay, John, there's another thing that I wanted to talk about today, which it's not Apple-specific, but it's still really cool.
I thought it was cool.
It's really cool. So the source code for the is it the Apollo Command Module or the Apollo 11 LEM?
I think it was all the source code for both systems.
Okay, so for the Command Module and the LEM, which is the Lunar Excursion Module, you can go and get all the source code online now.
At GitHub, yep.
Yeah, so I guess...
Much of it, because it's all in assembly language.
Yeah, well, you know, but it's there. So I suppose if you are fluent or want to become fluent in assembly language, you can go mess around with the code. But the fact that it's there, I mean, that in and of itself is cool. I mean, what an amazing piece of history, because someone had to create code to drive these very rudimentary computers that we use to send people to the moon.
I have done orbital analysis code in Fortran, and it can be rather complicated and boggles the mind to think that somebody would have to do orbital elements and rendezvous code in assembly language. I'm familiar with assembly language because I wrote a Apple II application for commercial sales, a shuttle simulator program. And I had to do the graphics on the Apple II in assembly language because BASIC was not fast enough on an Apple II to write the write to the screen and do all the graphics that I wanted to do. Yeah. So assembly language is just one level above machine language, which is ones and zeros. And so for instructions like, you know, load from memory or do a multiply or add, it's a three-letter mnemonic like ADD, where you take two memory locations and add them together, or two processor, registers.
Okay.
You take two registers, which you've loaded a number into, and then you add the two together and put the result somewhere. So you have mnemonics, and they're typically three letter, and then there's an action, a memory location, or some other argument at the end of that. And it's very opaque code because, you know, you can look at modern languages, which are almost like pseudocode, and sort of make sense of them because of the choice of variables and by the structure and the form of the code, you can kind of figure out what's going on and compare it to the original mathematical algorithms. But when you get into assembly language, suddenly everything becomes very opaque. And IBM at the Draper Labs developed this code, and they had to do it on a computer. Now get ready for this. They had to do it on a computer that had 36,000 15-bit bytes of storage, not 36 megabytes, but 36,000 bytes of storage, and it had 2,000 bytes of RAM. My Apple II, when I first bought it, had 4,000 bytes of RAM. So what they had to do is that this code had to be loaded in during the various flight phases. So when you're doing the rendezvous, you punch a code and you load from the fixed memory into this erasable memory 2,000 bytes of assembly language that would do the job at hand, whether it was rendezvousing or ascent or landing. And as everybody remembers, when Neil Armstrong was landing the lunar lander in July of 69, he got into a mode where he was getting lots of alarms, these 1201 alarms, which told him he was running low on fuel. But he had been through the simulator so many times, and he had so much experience before that in flight vehicles that simulated the lander, and in his Gemini days with emergencies, that he was so calm and so cool. He said, "Yeah, I know what's going on. I can ignore the alarm." And he set the lunar lander down successfully instead of aborting. The primitiveness of the computer that they used for that is amazing by modern standards.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably something on the order of an Apple II. And the reason I think the reason they didn't use Apple II is because they probably needed custom instruction sets, and they needed something that was radiation hardened, because commercial computer processors probably weren't rugged enough for the kind of environment, you know, radiation and heat and G forces, maybe not that so much. But it was a similar kind of computer. So think of an Apple II being the difference between life and death landing your lunar lander for the first time on the surface of the moon.
Well, to be fair, a lot of us landed lunar landers on the moon on our Apple IIs.
Yes, we did.
Over and over.
Yes, yeah. We did.
Hey, one thing I want to point out, which I think is really cool, is that the woman that was responsible for the coding was Margaret Hamilton, and I like to point that out because the coding world unfortunately seems to be so much of a guy's place, mm-hmm. and yet back in the day, the hardcore serious coder, that was Margaret Hamilton. She was the woman that was able to get people to the moon and back.
Director of Apollo Flight Computer Programming, Margaret Hamilton.
Yeah, and the stack of code, you know, the actual physical printout on paper, when you stack it up, it was pretty much as tall as she was.
Yeah, there's a great photo in my Cool Stuff Found article, and the full photo is in the article I linked to.
And what a great way to wrap up the week, talking about Margaret Hamilton and all of the amazing work she did coding for the Apollo missions. And it just happens to coincide with the end of Mac Camp for Girls, which is going on this week, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where Kelly is.
That's right. That's why we haven't heard from Kelly at all this week. She's been busy. So, hey, we're actually out of time, so we need to wrap up.
What a fun show.
Yeah, it was loads of fun. So, John, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Mac Weldon, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, macweldon.com, macweldon.com, and use the discount code TDO. Get 20% off some fantastic clothes. And if I'm liking it and I'm cool with this against my body, I'm betting you'll be cool with it against yours too. So go check them out, macweldon.com. Listeners, thank you for being here. And if you're at MacStock this weekend, find me and say hi, because I'd love to meet you. We'll see everyone again on Monday.